I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time. To become a part of time.
Hari Om, everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think we've got a very interesting show in store for you this evening, jam-packed with information as usual. The main theme of tonight's show will center around how extraterrestrial information enhances the yogic teachings, and we'll be talking about extraterrestrial first contact and some specific techniques, as well as get into some pretty interesting material from way back when all this kind of information first was presented on the planet. And I'd like to begin with a news flash. And the news flash centers around something we talked about at the end of the last ET Yoga show, and that was concerning the first contact scenario. And according to Bashar, the first group that will make contact with Earth will be a group that the Esasani call the Shalanaya. And the Shalanaya call themselves the Yael. And if you're not familiar with the concept known as the abduction scenario, basically in a nutshell, it was about extraterrestrials who had abducted humans, and some of those humans became involved in what was known as a experimentation concerning developing a new hybrid race. And those ETs that were involved primarily with that scenario are commonly known as the Greys or the Dows. And for those that are not familiar with that concept, Bashar kind of explains them as more interdimensional than extraterrestrial, in that they represent a future version of humans in a parallel reality. And apparently the majority of the Greys were clones, because there apparently are only about 2,500 of them actually still alive now. So with their race sort of dying out, they found a way to mix their DNA with human DNA. And my newsflash centers around this concept, and it was the Yael. And by the way, the Yael are beings that look pretty much like we do, almost identical. Like, we probably wouldn't notice any difference in a crowd or walking down the street, or, you know, maybe even in your own living room, except that you might notice a difference in consciousness. But the newsflash is that the Yael will unite children hybrids. So this is kind of very interesting for those of you out there who think you may or may not have been involved in an abduction, and also especially to those mothers who believe that they have children in this whole process. So the Yaya will unite children hybrids that were created from the gray human abduction scenario, and this would occur prior to the first public, what we would call a first contact. And they will exist in Earth, in out-of-the-way communities, for about 10 years before it becomes public knowledge. And this can be any time now. And if we're talking about actually phase one of this sequence would have been what is commonly known now as the Phoenix Lights experience. And that was basically a craft about a mile in length, shaped like a boomerang, that flew across the entire state of Arizona and seen by thousands and thousands of people. And I noticed that even recently YouTube video with the former mayor of Phoenix, who didn't say at that time of the first Phoenix Lights experience, but he says now that he believes it was an extraterrestrial craft. And if we look at the time frame from what Bashar suggests, that by 2035 we'll be members of the Association of Worlds, then previous to that obviously would have to have occurred first contact. And obviously about 10 years before that would be the reuniting of Earth mothers with their hybrid children. So here we are sitting in 2013, looking at about a 22-year window where some pretty major events are about to occur. And for those that, again, that did not hear the previous ET Yoga show, the Yayal are called the Shelanaya, and in Esasani, that means those who come first. But the Shelanaya themselves, they call themselves the Yayal. And this is, again, connected with the phenomenon called the Phoenix Lights. And, of course, the crafts of the Yayal have also been seen in all over the world, and they have flown over other cities, but the most famous one is the Phoenix Lights. Now, also of interest is that Bashar has said that the Esasani, or Sesani, will, starting in 2014, be called the Shakina, as they will have moved up actually one dimension to, I believe, seventh density, and will no longer have physical form, although they can present themselves with a form by choice. And this ties into what Andromedan contactee Alex Collier has said regarding an energy emanating from the center of the galaxy and moving all the dimensions up one level. And that, by the way, includes Earth, so that acceleration and vibration or ascension is obviously not long off either. And cosmic awareness has said that the split off of the two Earths is now happening. This also connects to the idea of when we would visit some planets in our solar system, we may not see life there, as it can exist in other dimensions, not visible to us at the moment. And the same would be true of the future Earth, and no doubt also true of the Lemurians that exist in inner Earth, and they are called the Argartha. And this also connects with Gaia's claim that we have stepped down from fifth density Lemuria to fourth density Atlantis to the present third density Earth, as the population in consciousness is also reflected on the planet and in the density of the planet, and each affecting the other. And apparently, according to Bashar, one of the first things the Yayal will do is tell us our actual history. And the Yayal would, as I said, pass for us on the street with only slight differences. So to me, this is pretty amazing information concerning some likely future scenarios. And of course, when public contact or first public contact will take place is At this point, I guess anybody's guess. And as Bashar always states, predictions are just a reading of the energies as they exist at the moment. And if things play out the way they are now, sometime between now and 2033, 35, and there will be full members of the Association of Worlds, which also indicates, obviously, that a first contact would have had to have taken place. And there's another clue here in that apparently this reuniting with the Yael and mothers of children who have babies with this new hybrid program will be able to have some experiences with each other. And doing some further digging, as I understand it, these kind of isolated communities may be set up in such a way that they can be put up and taken down in a hurry. In other words, there's a lot of technology out there that we're not quite aware of, and it could be quite an interesting and fascinating experience, especially for those who are directly involved with that scenario. Now, in continuing along my train of thought from the last ET Yoga program, in terms of getting into some of the history of humanity going way, way back, like to the Lyra constellation, I'm also going to begin to give a little bit more information given by the Pleiadians with respect to the Earth. And according to the Pleiadians, long ago, Earth was the eighth Pleiadian sister. And Earth was chosen to travel far away on her own to become the planet of polarity and choice. Polarity and choice means that Gaia was to be the planet where free will was to reign full force. And she was to take the energy of creativity and expand it by allowing emotion to be her force of creation, as well as her force of destruction. And this is why much of Gaia's planet is enveloped with water, the element which rules emotion. And the collective consciousness of this galaxy decided that Gaia would be the Pleiadian sister planet that would move away from home to find her personal self. And, of course, this relates to, the concept that Earth is a consciousness. And she was the most courageous and daring member of the family. And when Gaia heard of a new solar system on the outer border of the new galaxy that was going to birth planets, she desired to inhabit a celestial body in that. And according to Gaia, the fall of Atlantis served to lower its vibration to the third dimension. And as well, she also concurs with Arcturian and that's a channeling at the Sal Rochelle homepage regarding Pan and Lemuria as preceding Atlantis. And interesting to note that as time progressed, time being a phenomenon specific to this game and unknown in our natural state, the fifth dimension was filtered out of our consciousness and hence our perception of reality. And after the loss of Lemuria, which was a 5D force, and the Atlantean 4D force, we also became unconscious of the fourth density as well. And since then we only use these limited frequencies of third dimension and below, then we only need to access about 10 to 15% of our Earth brain and about 10% of our DNA. And many are getting tired of being on the beta wave world of 100% outside focus. And new codes from the sun are currently breaking down the old filters. And as well, Earth is entering deeper into the photon belt. And for those that are not really aware, each chakra vibrates to a different frequency, which corresponds to the brain waves of our different states of consciousness. And brain waves, like all waves, are measured in two ways. The first is frequency or speed of electrical impulse. And frequency is measured in cycles per second, ranging from 5 cycles per second to 38 cycles per second. And the second measure is amplitude, or strength of brainwave. And the outward-focused brainwaves have a faster frequency and lower amplitude, whereas the inner-focused brainwaves have a lower frequency and higher amplitude. And for example, the beta waves range between 13 and 39 cycles per second, the alpha waves, 8 to 12 cycles per second, theta waves, 4 to 7 cycles per second, and delta waves, 0.5 to 4 cycles per second. And to me, one of the obvious kind of correlations here is the importance of limiting television. And obviously, how it throws a spin not only on your personal beliefs, but also creating your reality, because if you recall, we discussed at length that what you believe is the reality you experience. And I'd just like to amplify a little bit on that concept about television and also new technology, because I don't know if, I guess I'm in a situation, and we just discussed the fact about possibly new mothers, and or even mothers of hybrid children, or even mothers of our own children these days. There certainly is a wide range of belief concerning, you know, what makes a quote-unquote good mother. And to me, one of the best things that a parent can do is to, you know, bring out the strengths of a child and find things that that child is innately interested in and loves to do, and finding their passion in life. And part of this being a good mother concept, to my way of thinking, is looking out for that child, especially some of these new kids with three strands of DNA coming into the world, and not buying into the concept of vaccines, or not buying into the concept of feeding the kids baby food instead of mother's natural milk, forming their immune system. Not buying into a cesarean birth unless it's absolutely necessary. To me, these are things that in a spiritual age should have become outmoded instead of becoming the rage. And in conjunction with that, I'm kind of surprised, frankly, that in the modern day, even in our school systems, we have rules about smoking, but we don't seem to have any rules about all the fluoride in the water, and we don't seem to have any rules about GMO food being served to kids in the lunch cafeteria. And I'd like to share with you, if you haven't heard about it, it's called the Great American Rat Experiment. And one group of rats was fed a diet of raw fruits and vegetables, nuts, and whole grains beginning at birth. And the group grows into healthy, affectionate, disease-free adults. And group two is fed the equivalent of the standard American diet, including meat, milk, candy, lots of fats, pastas, and breads. And this group grows into a vicious, nervous, cruel, disease-ridden adults, and they suffer from cancers, heart disease, and a host of other illnesses. Now, interestingly, a third group is also fed the standard American diet, but this group suffers the same diseases and displays the same temper as the second group. But the amazing part is, after the equivalent of 40 human years, the third group is switched to a diet of raw fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and nuts, and they turn into healthy, happy, disease-free specimens within 1 month. Now, I don't know, but if I look at that experiment, I don't view the human condition as very much different. And my suggestion for people is to, we need to, if we're going to be looking after these young kids, let's figure out that something's wrong out here when so many of this young generation is having so many health issues, and start looking at diet, and let's start using some common sense when it comes to all kinds of a host of things that society is pushing but aren't necessarily beneficial to our kids. And in my opinion, as a healer, people who watch 40 hours a week of television, I'm sorry, but there's not too much you can do to change people that are going to put that kind of effort into a television, which lowers the frequency of the immune system, and as well, my opinion basically is, and as well as the opinion of Palladian information, that's basically destroying a generation of kids on this planet. Now, moving on to give sort of a little bit better insight into the 3D game that we're playing here. Basically, here's our situation on the planet. When we enter the 3D game, we basically hit the accept button that says, you are now endeavoring to participate in the 3D game of separation and limitation. Hence, you will experience a gradual separation from the fourth dimension and beyond. You will also experience an increasing sense of separation from your higher self, as well as from all the higher vibrational realities. You have chosen to enter this experiment because you believe and or hope that this limitation in consciousness will spur you on to an enhanced evolution. And in a sense, that's the agreement that we make when we are in astral body looking to make our choice to be born on this planet. And another way of looking at that is looking at the game of creating our own reality, or the game of life. Imagine you're about to participate in an interactive role-playing game. And there are rules in this game that everyone agrees to. You know, what goes up must come down. Day is followed by night. And if you touch a flame, it will burn you, etc. And you get to choose the character you play beforehand. Shall I be a black or white, Australian or American, a male or a female? You might even choose to meet up with others in the game, which is tricky because you won't necessarily remember them when you meet them. And to enter the game, you must be born and become completely helpless. And you must forget everything you know and start all over again. You are given a set of rules by the older players, which you learn as you go along. And after a given time, you are declared an adult by the other players and are set out on your own. The thing is, after a while, you become involved so completely and get so immersed in the personality of the character that you are playing in this game that you forgot who you really are. You forgot that you are even in a game, and you begin to believe that the game is all there is. Now, you still get to decide everything that happens to your character, which you do constantly, but as a player who has now totally identified with the character you have chosen to portray, you begin to believe that everything that transpires is happening by chance or fate. And when the character you play goes to sleep, you return to your real self. This is also your opportunity to plan ahead and manifest the character's desires and wishes. And when the character later awakens, it is with the belief that he or she was simply dreaming. Some players, realizing that there has to be more than just this game, will start searching for answers. And some conclude that someone must have invented this game and probably all the players in it. They begin to worship this mysterious someone who obviously must be smarter than they are and invent more rules that they insist were made by the original game character. The only way to leave this game is called dying. And once this transpires, you remember who you really are and rejoin friends, some of whom were in the game with you. You may also interact with some who are involved with other games and share your experiences. The game, you conclude, was fun, adventurous, and a great learning experience, and you decide to play again, but this time in a different setting. So that's just another take on the current scenario that we find ourselves in on planet Earth, and fortunately, one of the greatest times to ever be born on this planet. The most amazing changes about to happen, the most probable densest planet in the solar system, but as Bashar would say, it's kind of like pulling back the a rubber band. The farther you pull it back, or the more dense you get, when you let go, you'll really fly forward. So the experience here on Earth clearly is of our choosing. And in moving now on to what I would call Bashar's Big Four, I kind of want to preface Bashar's Big Four with the first sort of intimations that I heard regarding not all of Bashar information, but way back in the 60s, there was a woman named Jane Roberts who channeled material that's now known as the Seth material. And I personally can't find anywhere in books or Google searching or whatever, a lot of these concepts that we're talking about this evening, can't find them anywhere except as it kind of started with the Seth material. And Seth presents himself as a non-physical being that was being channeled by Jane Roberts. And in my estimation, non-physical means probably seventh density and or higher. And there was once apparently a seance, and someone at the seance drew a picture as Seth made an appearance. And clearly from the drawing, it would appear to me that this being would have been termed by us to be extraterrestrial. But in either event, whether in point of fact Seth was extraterrestrial or not, irrelevant, because what's really relevant is the information. And as Daryl Anka has said many times with his channeling of Bashar, he can't prove who Bashar is, but that's not the point. The point is clearly the information, and if the information resonates, then you can use what you can use. And I made some notes about some of the main concepts that came about through Seth. And one is that physical reality arises from consciousness, not the other way around. That we create our own reality. That we are not at the mercy of a disjointed deity or subconscious. That we are multidimensional beings, more than our physical. That time and space are dimensional illusions we jointly create and by which we tacitly agree to abide by. At the core of our being, we reside in a realm in which time and space do not exist. We are, in essence, creative spiritual beings having an earthly experience. The fate of each of us is in our own hands. We have multiple, perhaps infinite, life experiences. Problems not faced in this life will be faced in another. We cannot blame God, society, or our parents for misfortune, since before this physical life, we chose the circumstances into which we would be born and the challenges that could best bring about our development. We form physical matter as effortlessly and unselfconsciously as we breathe. Telepathically, we are all aware of the mass ideas from which we form our overall conception of physical reality. You create your reality according to your beliefs and expectations. realize that your physical experience and environment is the materialization of your beliefs. If you find exuberance, health, effective worth, abundance, then take it for granted that your beliefs are beneficial. If you see a world that is a lot like you, take it for granted that your beliefs are beneficial. But if you find yourself in poor health, lack meaningful work, and basically, I guess, in a world that is not really reflective of your what you say is your preference, then it's probably a good time to reevaluate your beliefs. Now, that's some of the key points taken from the Seth material. And when I move on to Bashar material, I refer to Bashar material as kind of like the big four. And the first part of the big four is basically that your external reality is a reflection of your definitions, beliefs, and emotions. And it's not just, it's not just a statement. It's not something that needs to be figured out. It's an actual reflection. So this, again, coincides exactly with the Seth material, and it also coincides with the ultimate truths of reality, which is material that was channeled by the, actually probably from the Essene civilization through Mother Mary and eventually through Jean Hatch, and became, it was in the mystery schools for a couple thousand years, and it's now on your computer. You can look up the College of Christ Consciousness, and listed there the 21 ultimate truths of reality. All very consistent information between Bashar, Pleiadian information, the Seth material, College of Christ Consciousness, and all this stuff centering around belief. And I know we spent a lot of time on the first ET Yoga show talking about how modern science is now concurring with that conclusion. And another way to think of it, of course, the Pleiadians are very big for talking about how thought creates. Another way to put it is that belief creates. Or another way to think of it is that you can't have an experience unless you're a frequency match for it. And where do we get this frequency match? It comes from our beliefs. And, of course, as young children, probably until, I don't know the exact age, but somewhere around the age of 6 or 7, we spend the first 6 or 7 years of our life downloading beliefs from our initial caregivers. I mean, here we are in a helpless state, becoming dependent upon those caregivers, and we also download those beliefs. And at some point in time, as a maturing adult, we need to go through and thank our parents for those beneficial beliefs that were passed down to us, and also discard some of those beliefs that no longer serve us. And as I look around at other people that I've become, familiar with as friends or whatever, what I see in my outward learning is that people tend to be involved with repetitive cycles in their life and can't really figure out why. And it's clear. It's because if you're holding on to the same beliefs, you can expect the same beliefs to keep happening. So if there are things in your outer world that you'd like to change, then one of the things that would be highly, highly beneficial would be to get involved with changing your beliefs. And in conjunction with that concept of changing beliefs, I'd like to talk about some specific techniques that you can use to change belief. And Teal Scott has outlined some interesting concepts, and I'd like to share that with you. First, with respect to beliefs, the idea here is to think of them as being non-fixed, like they're very flexible or fluid, and that to think of a belief in these terms, is it a beneficial belief or a detrimental belief? And because basically a belief is a thought you keep thinking that manifests in your life. And a belief is a thought backed up by confidence, faith, trust, and acceptance. And it becomes an assumed truth or reality. So sometimes you can go out into the world and you can believe, let's say, that you're not very popular. And then when you go to a party and nobody talks to you, you think that that's just reaffirming the belief that you're not popular. But in point of fact, you had to have a belief that you weren't popular first, which creates the experience, not the other way around, that you were at the party and developed a belief. So this is a kind of an important point, I think, that the frequency of our desire and the frequency of our belief must be an exact match. And the desire for a belief and your belief that you deserve it must be a match. So I think this is an important aspect of looking at a particular belief. And both Bashar and Teal concur that when you shine light on a belief, it weakens or immobilizes it at that moment. Now, the second thing with respect to the examining the belief held is that beliefs are not true or false. It's either beneficial or detrimental. And I know we tend to think of things in light of, are they true or is it true or is it false? But it's not really that way. It's almost like I always give the example of one person believes the earth is flat, and I believe the earth is round. Well, your belief or that person's belief is equally valid to mine. All beliefs equally valid. Difference being that that person may have a more limited experience of all that is because of their limiting beliefs. And so what you need to determine is not so much whether your belief is true or false, but whether it's beneficial or detrimental. Also, it's important to determine the emotion connected with the original belief, because there's some payoff for having that belief. And you need to decide whether the emotional payoff is worth having it. So you need to make a decision that you want to change a particular belief, if you really do want to change it. And this weakens the belief as well, just the fact that, you know, you want to change it. And she gives an example of kind of a tabletop with the let's use it as an example of a belief, I suck at math. And the glue that's holding the table to the floor is equated to, like, the emotional energy that you put into this, and the actual table legs are the reasons why you've come to that conclusion, because you failed to test, or because your mom said so, or, you know, you gave some wrong answers in class. These are some of the reasons why you might come to the conclusion that you suck at math. And the legs are the experience and evidence to back up the belief. So what you want to do is to decrease the emotional superglue and knock out the legs of the table, which is the supporting evidence. So in order to do that, you want to create some new evidence. you know, some alternate definitions that are more positive and positive reasons that would give you some encouragement to develop a new belief. You may even come up with something like, I picked up the belief by overreacting to a learning situation. I have an old belief that was instilled because my father said that I was poor at math. But you need to reframe the evidence. So you want to find new ways of supporting a counter, developing a counter belief if that's the one you wanted to change. So you're looking for new evidence of your new belief and new proof that breaks up your old belief. And another thing to that can be important is to use affirmations correctly. For example, you might say, I'm not good enough, or you want to change that to, I am good enough. And sometimes it even sounds like a lie, because rather than closing the gap, it's such a big difference. Like if you've spent 10 years believing that you're not good enough and then all of a sudden say that you are, you sometimes need to build some stepping stones along the way. So you may want to develop some sort of intermediate steps in there, such as that, you know, I have some very positive characteristics, I have valuable things to share, et cetera. And soon the gap will be closed and you'll begin to believe it. And one of the things that she also mentions is that we don't seem to want to take responsibility for our outer reflection. And fact is, when you change your focus and your thoughts and get them in alignment with your desires, you begin to change the story you're telling about your life. And you want to change the thoughts, which will change the way reality is structuring itself. And reality actually shifts to the reality that you can consciously create. And that brings us to what I call one of the second point in Bashar's, what I call his big four. Nobody else does that I know of. And that's about placing positive spin on outer circumstances. Because of the fact that outer circumstances don't come with built-in meanings. We define the circumstance, and that also is what creates the emotion, by the way. You have to have a definition to have a bad emotional feeling about something. So you're defining reality in a certain way, let's say if it's a negative, and that's creating an emotion. But that particular event did not come with built-in meanings and emotions. We're the ones that provide that, and I think that's a very important distinction. So that now we're starting to talk about the fact that, yeah, we can actually, even if it sounds ridiculous, we can place positive spin on anything. Now, when I used to, years ago, do Tarot or I Ching or whatever, and there'd be a certain hexagram that would come up in the I Ching, and some I would view as favorable and some as not. Now I think of them all as good because they're all possible new learning experiences. It's kind of what I call stacking the deck of life in your favor, because no matter what's going on, if you can step back a little bit and throw a positive spin on it, it's not just BS, it's you can actually change the experience. The formula, as Bashar points out, is positive emotional spin in, positive experience is the result. If you throw a negative emotional spin and negative definition, then you'll have a negative experience. Okay, now to give an example of that would be, let's say that you're on your way to work and you're supposed to catch the train at 9 o'clock and you're there right at 9 o'clock, but the train just left. Now, you can spend a bunch of time, if you like, you know, complaining and creating a victimhood scenario there about the train left, and sit on the bench and first person that comes by, you're complaining to them about it and you're creating basically a negative experience. Okay, let's take person number two, same scenario. Their train leaves, but they go, oh, well, I don't know, I can't understand it. Train left, but I don't know. Maybe something good will come from this, even if I can't see how. I think I'll just, you know, throw a positive emotional spin on this. Something good will come from this. And the next train comes by, stops, and guess who's getting off of that train? Some of you haven't seen in 20 years, and all of a sudden you make a connection. All of a sudden, that particular experience shifts into a positive experience, one of positive creativity. And it's not baloney. What it boils down to is, and I've said this many, many, many times on radio, I challenge the listening audience to keep a log of any event, situation that you tend to view as negative. Throw a positive emotional spin on it. Even if you can't see any possible way, something good's going to come from this. Some things you'll see quicker. Some things take a lot more time, depending on what it is. But if you log this and start getting into it and play with it a while, it'll just blow your mind because it actually works. And it has something to do with a concept of Bashar's that I find a lot of people have trouble understanding. And it's called basically shifting reality or shifting to another parallel version of Earth reality. Now, my understanding of parallel realities is kind of like this. It's kind of like if, for example, I'm choosing to buy one type of car and another version of reality, I buy a different type of car. If both those potential realities could happen in this timeline, then there's no reason for a timeline split. But let's say that there was going to be an event like World War II where the United States was on the victorious side, but in another version, they were not on the victorious side. Those events can't coexist in the same timeline. You can't have both sides winning the war. So what happens is there's a timeline split. And you'll see this as well at the in the Akashic Record, is that you come to certain crossroads where you choose to go down one way and you might have chosen to go down another way. That other way still creates an alternate version reality, but your consciousness will follow along with the way you choose. So there are timeline splits. Another way to think of this that I think might make more sense to some people is that, let's say you have a cube and it's got nine squares on it, and they're all blue, and you change one of those squares to red. Do you now have a blue cube with one red section, or do you have an entirely new cube? Now, I find people tend to think of that in two different ways. They either clearly see it's a totally different cube, or they see that it's the same cube, but one portion of it is changed. When you're talking about shifting reality, some people think this is a huge leap in jumping off this planet. No, we're shifting all the time. It's just that we don't notice it. It's kind of like another example would be take a piece of film. A piece of film is a bunch of still frames, but when we run it through a motion picture projector, it appears as if there's motion. In reality, motion and time are both illusions. And reality is a series of still frames. So in one film, the film's already, it's already a complete film. When you shift or you change your experience, you're actually shifting to a new piece of film. It's not the same old film. It's kind of like when Bashar says you don't really change the world, but you change your frequency to match a version of the world that you prefer. And another way to think of this, that maybe I know some people it clicks when they think of this one. The universe has an infinite number of possibilities, and you're attracting yourself to the version that you're a frequency match for. Similar to a television, okay? Television doesn't have maybe infinite channels, but it's got tons of channels, okay? But you're, say you're on channel 2, okay? When you want to go to channel 32, you change frequency to 32. All the other channels are still operating simultaneously, but you're choosing to shift to channel 32. That's similar to shifting realities. And when you throw positive spin on outer circumstances, you actually shift to that circumstance and create for yourself a positive version of that scenario because it didn't come with a built-in meaning. Now, another one of the Bashar Big Four is, and those are kind of a combination of two of them in that throwing positive spin on outer circumstance. In fact, Bashar says that the primary function of the rational mind is to throw positive spin on outer circumstance because the rational mind is not capable of knowing the how of why things happen. It knows the what, not the how. It's the higher mind that can see the road ahead, looking from the top of the mountain, and knows the how. But we think that we are the rational mind takes on a lot more responsibility than it needs to in that regard. The main focus needs to be throwing positive spin on outer circumstance and following your excitement and your passion. Those, to me, are the main focus ideas of the rational mind. Now, so the combination of throwing positive spin and that circumstances don't come with built-in meanings are kind of two points that your outer world is comprised of your beliefs, your definitions, your emotions. That's the first point. And another interesting one is that outer circumstances don't matter. Only state of being matters. Now, interestingly enough, that's a mantra to and from your higher self in language that your rational mind can understand. Now, I'm going to repeat that one. Outer circumstances don't matter, only state of being matters. Now, it doesn't mean that outer circumstances are irrelevant, but it does mean that outer circumstances are basically not as important as your overall frequency or vibration. It's your emotional frequency, which is in the heart center, that basically interacts with the morphogenetic field that determines your version of reality. So, and this has also been proven scientifically, that the emotional or magnetic power that your emotions emit from the heart or the neural center in the heart, sometimes known as the brain in the heart, actually emits a frequency 5,000 times stronger than your brain, rational thinking mind does. So this is the main component of state of being. So if you consistently maintain the states of being of the emotions, unconditional love, acceptance, gratitude, joy, when you're in positive emotion, this is huge. It's highly important to keep in positive emotion, as opposed to even the outer circumstances, because in effect, outer circumstances eventually will match up to those emotional states. So with reference to all of that kind of information, which I call a Bashar's Big Four, there's another one that I think is about, you could actually slip it in and call it Bashar's Big Five, and that is that you don't have a belief you don't prefer. And that's another interesting concept because human motivation is based pretty basically simple. As we always choose what we think is more beneficial, and we tend to move away from what we see as not. So you don't for 1 minute believe anything you don't prefer. And that's sometimes a tough one to wrap your head around, but there's a reason why you believe it. Say, for example, you may have a belief about something, and there's clearly an emotional payoff for having that belief. And it may be that the only reason you don't change that belief or to a more positive one is that you have a fear of the unknown. So sometimes the known or more familiar, even though it may be more painful in some ways, is more preferable than taking the leap into the unknown or making a change into the unknown. And sometimes the belief is just that, for example, let's say that some people want to quit smoking. They say, well, I'm going to try to quit smoking, but really what they believe is if they quit smoking, they're going to be so irritable that they're going to be a pain to other people. So the emotional payoff for them to not quit is that they're more comfortable with the status quo than to make the change. So, but in every situation, we never have a belief we don't prefer. And so one of the things I was asked one time on a radio show about, of course, the 2012 scenario about all the doom and gloom that people were putting out. And I was saying, well, my friend John in Boston and I, we got a saying, and that is today's the best day ever, and this year's the best year ever. And for people that have a negative belief system, first off, I feel kind of sorry for them in that respect, because what you become a frequency match for is what you'll create. And I think that people that have the negative beliefs need to really do their homework in terms of why they believe what they do, what caused them to have some of these negative beliefs. And you'll generally find that they are associated with fear. And again, fear is probably a topic that we'll do a whole show on, because all fear is illusion based on erroneous thinking. And fear-based beliefs, eventually, when enough light's thrown on them, become sort of nonsensical. So in sort of recapping on tonight's program, I try to give a little bit of information concerning First Contact, news about First Contact, a little bit more information concerning Earth history, how Earth kind of got here, how we got here, the scenario that we're in, and some techniques that we can use to navigate our way through this world. And clearly, to me, the Bashar Big Four or Big Five are an important, important aspect of that. And one of the things that I want to mention as well with respect to a couple of techniques, let's say. Number one is the Pleiadians were once asked for a technique or something that really works that you could kind of hang your hat on. And you know what they came up with? They says, well, here's some steps that you can take that really work if you're really looking to make some acceleration in your spiritual development. Number one, do the Pillar of Light meditation. Now, we did Pillar of Light on about two or three shows ago. If you're looking to find that information, you can always go to www.etyoga.com, go under my products list and find techniques. Pillar of Light's there, spinning techniques, and that's the next one I want to mention is the Pleiadian spinning technique. And I want to share with you briefly just exactly how that's done. So if you're interested in doing spinning, the idea here is that you stand, and I try to stand basically facing the sun. Now, whether that's in, you know, at sunrise or at sunset, and I place my hands, palms together in front about chest level, and I focus my attention on my thumbs. And then I'm going to start turning with or spinning in a clockwise direction. And my feet are about a foot apart, shoulder width length, something like that. And I'm going to start in a clockwise spinning motion. And eventually you work up to what's comfortable for you, but you work up to 33 spins in one session. And it only takes, you know, two or three, 4 minutes to do this. And if you can work up to 99 spins a day, well, the Pleiadians say, we'll see how long you stay on the planet or at least in this dimension. And I think that's a pretty amazing statement to make for a pretty simple technique. So Pleiadian spinning, and basically how that relates to our task is that our task is to awaken and unite all of our 12 strands of DNA, which correlate to the 12 chakras. And this spinning of the 12 strands of DNA will draw to us energies that will intermingle and move throughout our being, activating and awakening the many different aspects of ourselves. And The spinning technique also enables us to receive and process information at an accelerated rate. And the Pleiadians, in, like I said, stated in the Bringers of the Dawn that working up and then doing 99 spins a day is very, very powerful. And another one of the things that they mention is pure water, water being very, very important. I'm going to share with you some things I do with water. I would not drink tap water under any circumstances. I don't want anything with the fluoride in it. I have a Berkey water filter, also a Pro Pure water filter for the bathtub because I don't want to sit in fluoride either. I like to play Bach and Beethoven music around the water because if you do the research and it's out there, Masaru Emoto has shown that water is a perfect reflection of consciousness. So what you put in water, it's there. And so I like to put the yoga yantras, mantras, not mantras, but yantras, physical symbols of the yogic nature for higher chakras. Also, crop circle pictures are great to paste around your water. Put love and positive energy in your water, sunlight. I mean, these are things. Water is huge. I mean, we're mostly water. And I can see why the Pleiadians would list this as one of the important things with respect to pillar of light, spinning, pure water, visualization, and intentions. And this is a process that if you work in those areas, that you can see accelerated growth. And at this point in time, I'd like to wish everyone my sincere best for their attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And we'll, in closing, I think the boys will share with you the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation. Have a good night.
I'd like to share with you the XYZ extraterrestrial meditation. First, you need to get really relaxed, either lying down or sitting comfortably or even standing up, whatever is the most comfortable for you. I then suggest taking a couple of deep breaths and imagine yourself in your perfect place of peace. You haven't a worry in the world and are just relaxing in your perfect place of peace. Then, imagine the following. Around the area of your heart or solar plexus, just behind that area, is a bright ball of white light. It is a packet of energy that is your essence. This star that you feel inside yourself, this ball of light, now grows and grows and grows in intensity and gets stronger and stronger and stronger until it bursts forth as a beam of light, a laser-like beam bursting out of the front of you and stretches as far as you can imagine infinity to be. Stretching, stretching out as a beam of light beyond the solar system, beyond the Milky Way galaxy, and beyond, going faster and faster and faster all the way to infinity. But it is also elastic, so as it reaches infinity, it slows down and will stop and turn around, and as a solid beam, it will creep back towards you from the far reaches of infinity, faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until it comes crashing through the center of your body and through you and out your back and all the way to infinity out the back, all the way out, further, further, until it reaches infinity, and it returns, but a little faster now. And faster and faster and faster until it too crashes through you, out the front, all the way to infinity. But it returns even faster now, out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front, and out the back and out the front. Back and forth, 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 back and forth. And out the front and out the back and out the front and out the back and out the front and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And let yourself get used to this idea. And then when it gets right in the middle of your body, it crashes out the left side all the way to infinity and back out the right side all the way to infinity and turns and comes back through the center, out the left side and back out the right side and side to side and side to side and front and back 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 until you get used to the idea, and then you have created an X and Y axis. Now another beam goes crashing through your head up all the way to infinity and turns around and comes crashing back through your head and out the bottom and up and down 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 and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side and up and down and back and forth and side to side. And it begins to build, 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 and builds to build until an infinite number of rays fly out simultaneously to infinity and stay there. You are suspended on beams of light, and you are stabilized at infinity. You hang there for eternity at infinity. Then you start to notice little bits of pulses, symbols, and signals, like a web that you are in the center of. Bits of information coming and going from every dimension and every space and time that exists. Every doorway and every gateway and forms and ideas and messages and communications like a giant matrix. You feel the ebb and flow of the infinite possibilities from every space and time, from front and back and side to side and up and down, clickety-clack, 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 clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety- on every line outward and receive one large pulse coming back like a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom. And now you're starting to sense a larger infinite mass mind behind this heartbeat, this pulse. It's like a gigantic awareness, one soul, one mind. You are suspended in the center of eternity. Boom, 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 boom. Now, with every heartbeat, a new breath, a new awareness, a new perspective, a new experience, a new sensation, a new dimension, a new galaxy, forever, forever, new, new, new. And now all the beams expand until you are surrounded in a sea of light that is becoming more transparent until it is like a bubble, but you can still hear it. Boom, 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 boom. You can feel the seed of all that is, and as the blood flows from your own heart, as the seed of the infinite of all that is, on that pulse, you are connected from every direction and any direction simultaneously. And every time you remember your heartbeat, you will feel connected to this heartbeat. Be in your perfect place of peace and feel your heartbeat. Now, take a deep breath and feel refreshed, feel loved, and feel energized.